Headlights on, it's working. I had turned it off abruptly with David Lehman. We're now in the room with Mike Swenson and his counsel on the same day, July 29th. And I'm still Kim Schaefer with the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission. And his attorneys who are present are named
Peter Chafkin from Mintz Levin and a project analyst, not an attorney, Sam Siegel.
Great. And Mike, for the record, we'd like to have your consent on the record to taping this interview.
You have my consent.
Thank you. So a little bit of background about the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission. We have a different charge and somewhat different focus from other investigations that you have had the pleasure of being part of. Forgive my joke, I really shouldn't. We were established by Congress as an independent commission to investigate the causes of the financial crisis and to report back to Congress and the President by December 15th of this year. We have had a series of hearings and are engaged in the process of writing the report. The investigation is supposed to be of particular institutions and why they either failed or might have failed, but for government intervention, as well as a list of issues or potential causes of the financial crisis. And the commission is organized somewhat into an investigative staff and a research staff. We work together. I am more affiliated with the research staff. And so this interview is less about specific transactions and more about the broad brush of market developments and your understanding of those market developments and how, you know, we got into the financial crisis mess that we got into. For your benefit, I have a background in structured products. I did not do mortgages. I did CLOs at Bear Stearns. I was senior managing director there. So I have a certain amount of sophistication, but we're doing this for the record. It really is oral history, and people who may be listening in the future will not have my level of sophistication. And I wasn't a trader. I was a banker. So I know some of what you I'm familiar with some of your activities, but not others. Do you have any questions of me before I start?
No.
Any of you? Okay, fine. I think you've been offered up because of your involvement with ABX and pay-as-you-go swaps. And I should start somewhere else. Since you haven't been interviewed by the commission, would you mind taking a bit of time and explaining your professional background and what you did at Goldman Sachs?
Okay.
Or do at Goldman Sachs?
I graduated from college in 1989 from Williams College with a degree in economics. I started my career at Arthur Andersen and Company, where I worked for 5 years. While I was at Arthur Andersen, I earned my MBA in finance from New York University in 1992. I joined Salomon Brothers in 1994 as a member of the Corporate Bond Research Department. And worked at Salomon Brothers and survived a couple of mergers, you know, the Travelers merger and then subsequently the Citibank merger, and joined Goldman Sachs in March of 2000 to head up the asset-backed trading desk here.
Sorry, when you were doing corporate research at Salomon, was that in ABS related or corporate?
Originally, it was in ABS, and then I soon became a desk analyst and then a trader at Salomon Brothers, and traded there for 3 to 4 years, and then joined Goldman Sachs to head up its asset-backed trading desk. He's a member of the corporate bond trading desk here at Goldman in March of 2000, and subsequently, approximately about a year later, the asset-backed trading desk moved into the mortgage department. You know, where I head the asset-backed trading desk from that 2000 period to the time period that we're talking about here, and now I currently co-manage the mortgage trading business here at Goldman Sachs with David Lehman.
So you were involved with trading credit cards and auto loans and all of that as well?
Credit cards, auto loans, student loans, you know, subprime mortgages, home equity loans, a lot of different things, franchise securities.
CMBS?
No. At one point, there was a brief point in my career prior to David Lehman being here, where I was co-managing the ABS and CMBS trading desks. It was some point in 2000, I don't recall, 2003, thereabouts.
I'd like to start this conversation in a somewhat different place. In your view, what caused the financial crisis?
Well,
what were the predominant drivers?
Look, I think... it's a very difficult question to answer, and frankly, just think about the position that I was in. I was, co-managing this SPG trading group at Goldman Sachs. So, I'll give you some factors that I think may have, or factors that needed to be considered on coming up with that answer. But I frankly don't have the answer as to what caused the crisis. You know, I think that there's, the factors that contributed was, one, bad lending practices, not just in the, mortgage arena, but in other sectors as well. I think poor risk management was another factor that contributed to the crisis. I think with some entities not requiring enough, holding enough capital for the trades that they were in is another. So people were holding insufficient capital for the degree of risk that they were willing to take. And then another factor is the fact that some entities in the financial markets that were taking a great deal of risk did not mark to market. Those are all contributors to the financial crisis. And there are other factors that I'm not mentioning here, and I need some more time to really think about it. But also, there's other factors in other markets that I wouldn't be aware of that were big contributors to the crisis.
This isn't a test. Fair enough. Thank you. As we talk, if you want to add to that list as you're thinking about all this, please feel free. So you were involved then with ABS and mortgages at Goldman Sachs through the whole rise of the subprime bubble, if you will.
Yes. I've been involved in in the market before it was called subprime, when it was called the home equity market, when there was a great deal of stress in the 90s. So, yes, we traded asset-backed securities that involved subprime during that period.
Okay. At a certain point, the ABS CDO product developed and started increasing substantially in volume. I think that was around 2003. Do you have a different sense of timing?
You know, I think if you're talking about that time period, you know, I don't have the data in front of me, but what I can say is there was some period during this past decade when, in the middle of the past decade, when ABS-CDOs increased in volume. Now, but I don't know the exact days. And, you know, we were not the largest player in CDOs at that point.
Fair enough. But in your trading of subprime, when ABS-CDOs started to become a much larger and more active product, did you see a shift in what was happening in the subprime market that as many people assert, and we're still gathering the data on this, that a very large percentage of the subordinate subprime and some Alt-A, haven't measured the Alt-A, bonds ended up in CDOs?
Yes, I mean, over that time period, the number of bonds that were purchased by CDO managers that ended up in CDO warehouses increased over that time period.
So there's some thought that it went from a minority of those bonds to actually being the dominant market buyer. Would you agree or disagree with that?
It became an important factor of the market. I don't have the data specifically in front of me, but I do recall that they were, you know, towards in the 2006 period, it was a very major important buyer for that types of products. But there was also a number of real money managers and insurance companies that were buying subordinate mortgage securities. They weren't. CDOs were not the only buyers of those securities during that time period.
During this time period in development, was there any shift that you noticed in credit analysis? The type of questions, the type of credit work that buyers did in looking at particularly the subordinate subprime bond?
For me to be able to answer that question, we were originally talking about 2003. What time period are you speaking about?
So
we're talking about a very...
Indeed.
Broad breadth, and there was a lot that happened during that period, so I'd like to just be helpful.
I'm actually talking about the arc of that time period. The hypothesis behind my question is that perhaps there was some shift somewhere in the 2003 to 2005 time period, but Did you notice any shifts? And if you want to ascribe it to a different time period, that's fine.
Look, I think during that time period, people analyzed bonds throughout the 2003 to 2007 time period. People analyzed bonds in a very similar fashion. The assumptions that went into it, there were default curves that people would develop on various pools that... were model driven as well as with a subjective overlay, and I also want to just actually make the key point that I'm speaking about how Goldman looked at bonds. I don't know what one of I can anecdotally tell you how some of our investors looked at bonds. It might be more helpful for you to speak with people that were buying these securities and see how they analyzed them. But you would have a default curve based on historical performance.
Sorry. Since you've made that distinction, I'd actually like to be more precise in my question. You interfaced as part of your job with investors. So I it's inappropriate for me to ask you about their exact mindset, but you were asked questions.
Yes.
And you were asked for certain analysis. So I would suggest it is appropriate for me to ask you, was there some shift in your perception of what you were being asked and some shift in your perception of the sort of credit analysis that was being done?
No, I think it was, it became a situation where the initially in 2003 with the advent of a lot of this subprime, this generation of subprime securities, which were generally first mortgages to lower credit borrowers. They weren't home equity loans like subprime loans were considered back in 97 and 98. I think there were default curves and assumptions, loss assumptions that were based on historical performance that during that time period the securities performed quite well. There was one factor that many people, or virtually almost everybody in the market, did not factor in, which was a severe downward price move in home prices. And this, during that time period, the securities performed quite well because you had a rising home price market. So that indirectly resulted in curves that were more optimistic than what actually happened with those pools. Had home prices not gone down, these securities may have, done a lot better than, or had done as expected. We don't know. But there was a fundamental shift and a focus on home prices when we started to see a slowdown in home price increases towards the, let's call it towards the third quarter of 2006, and there was greater focus on that. There was, some very, very early research being done on the street on the home prices and its effects on the performance of these securities. But the data set that any analyst would be able to use that information was very limited. It was really confined to two instances in the history of the U.S. housing market. And the instance that actually had enough data for people to analyze materially was the the home price declines in the 90s in Southern California that had to do with a defense plant closing. Now, those home price drops were largely driven by higher rates of unemployment at that time. And what was different about the time period that we're talking about, we had very low levels of unemployment. And during that time period, there was a great deal of debate amongst all people that were deeply involved in the mortgage market at that time about how these macroeconomic factors would affect the performance of these securities. So we had an instance where we had high unemployment in a very small region, isolated region, where we had home price declines driven by higher unemployment. But in this instance, we had very low levels of unemployment nationally. It was very difficult for us to correlate defaults that were arising from lower home prices on a national level or on a level on these pools, because we didn't know what would be the thing that would trigger those lower home prices, because we had a very strong economy and a very strong employment picture in the states at the time. So it was a constant debate on how all these factors were going to interact. And that debate started to develop in the general mortgage community and towards the second half of 2006 into 2007.
Again, refining my question, with the growing importance of the ABS CDO bid for subordinate subprime bonds, did you find that the type of questions or type of analyses that the CDO buyers did their credit analysis was in some way different from the type of questions or analysis or due diligence that other types of investors did in the subprime area?
I don't believe so. If you look at a lot of the CDO managers, they were money managers which had invested in these types of securities and would have used the same tools, I would assume, I would believe, that they would use the same tools to their disposal to make the analysis for the transactions that they were doing. In these instances, their names were on the transactions. They had an incentive for them to perform. They were earning fees and management fees for those transactions as they performed well. But one thing I'd like you to understand is I was running the secondary desk, and I wasn't part of the new issue marketing of new issue securities, which was the largest part, which was where, in large part, those CDO investors were investing their money in bonds, was through the new issue process. And that's where they would be buying the cash bonds. So, I believe that they were doing that similar analysis that they were doing in other securities.
So I'm a little confused. When I understand that you were not part of CDO origination in any way, that's clear to me. But the CDO managers who needed to acquire collateral to do
ramp
their
up.
CDOs, right. So didn't they have to deal with you and your desk in order to acquire that collateral?
They could. I traded secondary securities. I don't trade new issue securities. So what I'm being very specific to your question is that you're asking me about subordinate bonds that they bought and the analysis that they did. They typically bought those subordinate bonds in the new issue process.
I see. Okay.
And if we had secondary securities, they would buy them from us.
From
based on my observations from the secondary market, which I believe apply to the primary, they would do similar analysis to what they would do for securities that they would hold in their portfolios.
Okay, these distinctions matter, and thank you for clarifying. Not everyone in Washington understands such distinctions, but again, part of the subject matter here today is the interplay between mortgages and CDOs and various forms of credit derivatives, and that's the part of the potential causes for the financial crisis that we're trying to unpack in as analytically honest way as we can. The cash ABS CDO market developed, grew in size. It had come out of actually the multi-sector, grown out of the multi-sector ABS CDO market, and had become more dominantly focused on mortgage securities. And then there was a lot of demand, and pay-as-you-go swaps started to develop, and that led into synthetic CDOs. So I'd like to understand your desk and your role with regard to the pay-as-you-go swaps.
Right. My desk was specifically involved in trading ABS default, ABS CDS, the credit default swaps. So, there was a tremendous amount of cash in the system, an investor demand to buy high quality or high rated assets and there was a demand to purchase CDOs. What CDOs provided was an ability for investors that needed to buy higher-rated securities, to buy, say, AAA securities that would be formed out of a pool of BBB subprime mortgage securities. And the excess returns that those investors were paid to buy those AAA securities backed by CDOs or investment-grade securities, I'm just using AAAs for this example, became very attractive to those investors. The underlying securities performed quite well during the 2003 through 2005 period. And investors were attracted to the extra returns that they were getting. They're approximately getting 20 to 25 basis points more in spread than the comparably rated AAA RMBS security at that time. So that demand...
Over agencies, you mean? Over...
I'll just try to be more clear. The spread in which investors were paid to buy a AAA CDO security backed by BBB RMBS was approximately 20 to 25 basis, let's call it 25 basis points greater than the spread on a AAA RMBS security. So they were getting more spread for the same rating, and there were a number of investors who were attracted to that. That demand drove the demand for more CDOs, and there was limited supply of cash securities, BBB cash securities, to create CDOs. So at that time, investors started to become more and more comfortable with purchasing initially hybrid CDOs. Those were CDOs that were backed by cash and synthetic securities, and then ultimately investors became more comfortable purchasing 100% synthetic CDOs to meet that demand for assets. So it was a demand-driven phenomenon from the investor side of CDOs that helped meet the demand from the macro community that wanted to buy protection on subprime securities to reflect their views of the housing market. And we stood in between, in the middle of that, as a market maker, in facilitating those flows. So in the 2006 time period, we generally were facing, we were selling protection to investors who wanted to express or hedge, express a negative view on the housing market, also who wanted to hedge their portfolios, whether it was they owned whole loans, whether they wanted to play capital structure arbitrage for cash securities they owned and bought protection on higher parts of the capital structure. And we would buy protection from long-only investors, money managers, insurance companies, hedge funds, or we would buy protection from CDO managers that were ramping up transactions for CDOs. We stood in the middle of that.
Do you have any general sense, it's hard to get data on, extremely hard to get data on this, of how much of this demand was hedging versus how much was investing?
I don't have the data. I mean, what I can say is on the protection, on the protection buyers front, we faced a lot of, we sold protection to a number of macro hedge funds that were using this, their strategy of shorting subprime against something else that they were long. And those were relative value trades. They could have been hedging trades. They could have, I just don't recall. We faced a lot of, we faced mortgage originators. We faced banks, and and what parts of those institutions they were coming out of. I just don't recall, and I don't know what the what the strategy was to in percentage terms for you.
Okay, fair enough. You mentioned mortgage originators. Let's talk a little bit more about that. Although maybe that's a different colleague of yours who I should be asking those
probably
questions.
Probably next week,
so.
Yeah.
Some of these questions are more asking for your sense of the market, because there was no reason for you to look at data in the way that I'm asking a question. So I don't expect a precise answer, but you and people in similar seats or at other institutions were closest to these market developments. So that's why we're taking your time.
No, I understand.
Okay.
I just want you to understand that these are very complicated markets with very complicated flows, and it's important that we don't make false assumptions as to what people were doing on the other side when you don't know. I'm just trying to tell you what I know from my experiences.
Fair enough. So do you have a sense of mortgage originators, their use of derivatives to hedge their activities? Was that substantial? Did they do it through single name, through ABX? What was that about?
It wasn't substantial. It wasn't close to the flows we were seeing from hedge funds or people that wanted to hedge positions that they had. Mortgage originators, I think Kevin's actually a better person, I think you're speaking with him next week, that would be better to tell you about the thought processes that may have gone through their minds, but I would say that they were not a significant part of our flow. What I recall was that originators tended to be optimistic, thinking that they could originate at a price and sell at a price and earn the spread. They viewed hedging as something that reduced that price and not protection against the price going down. But that's just what I recall as a general theme on why the mortgage originators weren't as active as we would have thought when we originally developed the product. What I can say is the trading desks, whole loan trading desks, became active users of the product because Wall Street firms treated it as an effective tool for them to manage their risk and for them to be able to buy more loans and do more business. And it was a prudent risk management technique.
And was this primarily ABX or was it single name?
Primarily ABX because you could get the size, the transparency, liquidity, and it was something that was much more easily mapped to different loan pools that people have. But I don't recall specifically, but there may have been people that use single names, but I don't believe we did. I don't recall.
So for continuity of the narrative, if we could then focus on ABX for a bit.
Okay.
And its development, who was long, who was short. There's no publicly available data as to volume, although we are engaged in a process of trying to aggregate it, actually. But if you have comments about your experience with volume, that would be helpful.
Okay. Once we had the standard pay-as-you-go ISDA contract established, I believe it was June of 2005, on single-name CDS, a number of dealers started to get together. It was initiated by Deutsche Bank, from what I recall. We had a number of meetings at Deutsche Bank's offices with Goldman Sachs was present, J.P. Morgan was present, Bear Stearns, Deutsche Bank, Citibank, and I may have left out one or two that I don't recall. And we went through the mechanics with as to how we would develop a tradable ABX or a tradable mortgage credit index. It wasn't even named at that point. And it was with the intention of doing it with market partners, who was the calculation agent, I think that's the term that you would use, for the investment grade and high yield indices, amongst other indices. And we all got together and tried to discuss the how would we construct an index that would be that would be attractive to people who would like to express both long and short views in the housing market. And they could be, you know, money managers who wanted to get long, you know, originators who wanted to hedge themselves and manage their risk, trading desks that wanted to hedge their risk or get long, or macro hedge funds that wanted to express the long or short view of the market. Several meetings were held at the Deutsche Bank offices where the index was formulated. We had a number of votes on different components of the index and how it should work. But the basic premise was we were going to create a basket of standardized, whether it ended up being 20 individual pay-as-you-go contracts, it would be traded as a single index. And we established the rules of the construction of the index and decided upon 20 names, AAA, AA, single A, BBB, and BBB minus, with the intent of having a new index every 6 months. The first index came into trading in January of 2006. It's called the ABX 061. And frankly, we didn't know what to expect on the first day of trading. You know, the corporate indices, the investment grade, and the high yield indices were very actively traded. And, you know, from our perspective, we were hoping that we would eventually trade the ABX, the mortgage credit indices, with the eventual intent of trading standardized tranches off of the indices, very similar to what happens in the corporate markets. You'd have two-way tranche trading, which leads to a lot of volume, and it was an exciting business in the corporate markets for all of the players, and we thought it could potentially go in that direction. Trading started off in that January, and volumes picked up. There was a fair amount of macro activity, and we did a number of large trades with some large hedge funds, the volumes picked up, but what happened was over the course of 2006, while volumes were okay, on the protection buying side, the protection selling side for ABX, it didn't really fit a lot of long players, unless people saw that there was a relative cheapness to that product versus all of the names that weren't in the index. Over the course of 2006, the ABX traded at levels that were cheaper than the names that weren't in the index, and it got cheaper and cheaper because a big source of the demand, as you recall, for single names was coming out of the CDO managers who were desiring to build diversified pools of RMBS securities to put into their transactions. And also, money managers would do a great deal of work on individual CUSIPs to say that they would like to write protection on them, and get long those names, and generally they were not names that were in the ABX indices. So during that period, you know, there was, over the course of 2006, we were all in the market trying to work on ways in which to create standardized tranche indices, but it was only a 20-name index. It didn't look like the corporate index that had many more names. And
I didn't want to interrupt you before, but why did you decide on only 20 names since this
year? It was a vote, and we would have preferred to have actually had a much more granular index. And Goldman Sachs would have preferred. There were other dealers that would have preferred, that wanted much less. They felt it was very difficult to price the index with many different bonds in it. And we wanted more than 20 names. Our preference would have been to have something much more than that, to have a much more granular index and something more reflective of the market.
And those who wanted the limited set, it was just the difficulty of doing the actual daily pricing that concerned them?
That is one factor that I recall.
Do you recall other factors?
I don't know why people voted the way that they voted. It was an independent vote, so I do remember the debate as being, people were very concerned about, there was confusion by individuals that you would actually have to price the individual security to figure out what the price of the aggregate was, but when you're trading the aggregate as a whole, it was a kind of interesting conclusion for others to have.
And do you recall the number of names Goldman wanted in the index?
I don't recall what the numbers were, whether it was 40 or 50 names, but there was a number that was far greater than 20.
Okay.
That was the sort of cutoff, and then there was 20, and I believe there was even a number that was smaller than that.
Okay. Forgive the interruption.
Where
you were, I'm sorry.
Oh.
Alongside.
Alongside.
Right, so during that time period, you know, our strategy was that we would be long the ABX index because of the relative cheapness relative to all of the other securities. So we actually took the other side of a lot of those macro hedge fund flows. Our belief was, once standardized tranche trading was going to come into being, there was going to be a large demand for investors to purchase standardized tranches, which would actually ultimately drive in the prices of the ABX index. It was something that happened in the corporate market in the early 2000s with the development of tranche trading. It was something that we felt was likely to happen during that period. But we also were asked to price those flows for our clients. You know, we're in a market-making desk, and we took the view that relative value between both security, between the ABX and the individual single names, was appropriately priced at that time. And eventually the market would grow comfortable with this concept of being long index.
Keep going.
So now we're into the third and fourth quarter of 2007, where there's a very robust CDO market and a very intense demand from some large macro players to buy protection in the ABX. We ended up with a situation where we, by December of 2006, we were asked to bid on close to $25 billion of BBB and BBB minus collateral for CDOs and single ABS CDS single name form from our client base. And as a market maker, we're expected to provide prices. And at that time, we were long ABX against those protection buys. And we accumulated a position, and I don't recall the notional of a few billion of ABX and a few billion of single names by the end of December of 2006. I believe we were net notionally pretty flat at that point.
Can we just, I just wanted to, can we go outside for a second? I want to ask you just a clarifying question before I say something.